Welcome to the State of Opportunity special. I'm Cynthia Canty. Imagine what it's like to be unable to afford a home, to be unable to set down roots. It's a problem far more complex than just move to some place you can afford. All over Michigan, there are cities and towns suffering from a lack of affordable housing. The demand is growing, but the supply just isn't there. And yes, when you talk about affordable housing, you have to talk about financing and medium income levels and zoning. But you're also talking about people's lives. And having a home can be the key to a new life.
My name is Melvin Parson. I am a current student at Eastern Michigan's School of Social Work program. Wow. When you say affordable housing to me, the words I think of is game changer. I think of what a positive effect affordable housing has had on just kind of like stabilizing me in a way that has allowed me to get my feet up underneath me.
We admit the phrase affordable housing can be confusing. It can mean many things depending upon whom you ask.
I think of a house that you can walk into, look around, like, and write a check for.
Condos and kind of like trailers, modular homes.
When I hear affordable housing, I think of low income or some type of subsidized housing.
Somewhere where you can live where it doesn't take over half of your income.
I mean, housing you can afford, but that's a great question. I would think housing for first-time home buyers, but you know, I'm not really sure what that means.
This State of Opportunity special explores just what affordable housing means and why it matters to all of us. And we'll see what tools could be used to make Michigan communities more affordable places to live. Let's start by learning how Ann Arbor and Grand Rapids are tackling the challenge of affordable housing. Ruth Kelly is with us. She's a Grand Rapids City Commissioner who helped to lead the great housing strategies in that city. And Jennifer Hall is here. She's the Executive Director of the Ann Arbor Housing Commission. Jennifer, just what does affordable housing mean to you?
Well, I work for an agency that has federal funding. When we're talking about affordable housing, people in the area of work that I do, we're talking about housing that's affordable so that any income, no matter what your income is, you're not paying more than 30% of your income on housing. So if it's homeownership, it includes your taxes. If it's rental, it includes your utilities. And then there's a new line of thought that you should also include transportation. So 30% toward housing, 15% towards transportation.
And does that fit with your vision or your view, Ruth?
Yes, it does. We have had some additional discussion about how to define this for our purposes of getting more people on board around this notion of providing affordable housing so that we differentiate to some degree between not only looking at the 30% threshold and the additional expense for transportation, but also to define groups that need affordable housing. So that could be anything from what we consider traditional low-income housing to what we're beginning to call the missing middle or workforce housing. For example, students that are graduating from college burdened with student loan debt and young entrepreneurs that we'd like to attract to the region that we know if we're going to compete regionally, we need to have here in Grand Rapids. Those persons are looking for housing and struggling to find what they can afford. And then our senior populations. So we are looking at it not only around those percentage thresholds, but also trying to address the needs of different groups.
So it's not just the poorest that we're talking about.
No, not at all.
I would agree with that. There's a need all the way from people who are homeless or have no income all the way to people who are in the working class. Particularly in Ann Arbor, the housing costs just keep going up, and it's really pushing people farther and farther away who otherwise would work and live in Ann Arbor.
In fact, as we talk about how we define affordable housing, I'm wondering, from the perspective of both of you, as you work with people who are struggling financially and who are searching for housing, how do you think a family of four who's struggling financially would describe affordable housing? What do you think, Jennifer?
Around here, a family of four typically would want to live in a single-family home, which typically would be, at the smallest end, a three-bedroom, one-bath home. Those kinds of homes in Ann Arbor. you probably can't find a home for less than $150,000 and probably closer to $200,000, $250,000 as a starter home, no basement, single family. That's very much out of reach for most families, especially if you're just starting out or you maybe you're in a profession like social work or teacher or, you know, someone that's not going to make $100,000 a year.
How does it look from Grand Rapids, Ruth Kelly?
It's similar. Our housing costs aren't quite that high, but again, if you look at the wages that people are earning here in Grand Rapids, they're probably also not as high. So that's the other piece of the equation that we're struggling with.
When we look at Grand Rapids and Ann Arbor, are there models of affordable housing right now that you think are working, Ruth?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I think as a result, in part, of these discussions that we've been having around affordable housing, we've got groups that are stepping up. For example, we've got a developer here in Grand Rapids that went after some low-income housing tax credits and has created a place on the Michigan Street corridor here called Diamond Place. It is a $42 million development that is moving forward. It will include 160 residential units that are one- and two-bedroom, and 125 of those will be for income-restricted individuals. We are very pleased that all of the units will be the same, so we're not having any difference in quality in those units, but we are having a mixed income and actually mixed-use development that will be happening there. And they would not have pursued that had we not had these discussions starting last April.
Take us to Ann Arbor. Have you got any things that you can really point to, Jennifer, that say, yep, this is working as far as affordable housing in Ann Arbor?
We have a lot of great projects and some really great developers in Ann Arbor. The vast majority of our focus historically and continues to be folks on the lower end of the income scale, folks who are homeless, 30% of median income or less, which in Ann Arbor, a single person, 30% of area median income is $17,750. A family of four is about $42,000, which is very high compared to the rest of the United States. So most of our effort has been in that area. And the other area, the most successful sort of mixed income housing that we have in Ann Arbor, is we have four very large cooperatives, which was a federal program about 40 years ago, where you, when you become a member of the co-op, you have to meet a certain income threshold, usually about 80% of median or 100%. But your income can go up or down while you're there. And so over those 40 years, we still have a lot of folks that are very low income, but we also have lawyers, we have doctors living in some of these housing that was built to be for low-income households. And each of those locations has several hundred, up to 400 and some apartments. And so they have a nice mixture of incomes. The city of Ann Arbor has actually, as a city government, has tried in a couple different ways to get developers who are doing market rate housing to include affordable housing as well, whether that's extremely low income or moderate. So they actually, when they have parcels that the city owns that they are going to sell and issue an RFP to include housing, they've had a couple that they have required the developer to include some kind of affordable component with a long-term restrictive covenant.
So we're going to nudge these
who otherwise wouldn't do it if they were doing it on their own. But if they want to build on city-owned property, they have to include some kind of affordable component.
This is State of Opportunity, and we are speaking with Jennifer Hall, the Executive Director of the Ann Arbor Housing Commission, and with Grand Rapids City Commissioner Ruth Kelly. And Ruth, your city brought together some stakeholders to come up with solutions, and that initiative is called the Great Housing Strategies. You helped lead that, and you've identified eight goals. Can you give us the, say, top three most pressing issues?
What we're recognizing right now is that we need to look more closely at land use and zoning, housing finance, and our low-income and vulnerable populations. Mm-hmm. So those are three areas that we focused on. We are also looking at our economic development tools, but we recognize that if we don't provide incentives, then we will have less development in areas, for example, on our main corridors, our busier streets, and we would get more pressure on our neighborhoods, and we do not want to displace particularly these families because there's no space to build elsewhere. We also want to preserve the farmland around the city of Grand Rapids for agribusiness, so we'd like to drive more families and individuals into the city. So we want to incentivize those situations. We can only do so much around providing or encouraging developers to have at least a percentage of their development set aside for income-restricted housing. State law prohibits us from requiring that in private development and private property. However, a government unit could do that.
That was Grand Rapids City Commissioner Ruth Kelly. What she's talking about there is inclusionary zoning, IZ. That's one of the tools we'll talk about later this hour that could help communities like Grand Rapids increase their stock of affordable housing.
My name is Gwyneth Hayes. I'm from various places in Michigan for the most part. I am a social worker. I'm a professional musician. And I am a resident of low-income housing.
Gwyneth Hayes is 37. Since she was a teenager, she's lived in a public housing apartment in Ann Arbor. About 2 years ago, the apartment went through major renovations, and that meant Gwyneth had to move out and had to find a new place to live.
And they offered us a housing choice voucher so that you can go out into the regular rental market to landlords. Any landlord will take a Section 8 voucher, and you can just live in the general community and still have a discount, pay 30% of your income, whatever that may be. So I decided to take a voucher and try my hand at living in the general community. So far, it's worked out. I have a dishwasher. I've never had a dishwasher. It's amazing. And also, I didn't realize the stigma I had lived under when, you know, I'd meet people in the general community and then they'd find out where I lived. And somehow, you know, sometimes the way that they would treat me or think about me because I lived in public housing, I didn't realize I was living with that till I left.
All this hour, we're exploring just what affordable housing means and how it can change people's lives. We've seen how Ann Arbor and Grand Rapids are addressing the lack of affordable housing. But let's widen our focus now to the entire state of Michigan. What's been tried? What works and what hasn't? And why should the lack of affordable housing really matter to all of us? With us now is George Galster. He's the Clarence Hilberry Professor of Urban Affairs and Distinguished Professor in the Department of Urban Studies and Planning at Wayne State University. George, welcome to State of Opportunity.
Thank you very much, Cindy. It's great to be here.
Many states and their cities are facing a lack of affordable housing, but you say the origin for Michigan's problem with affordable housing is somewhat different than other places. How so?
When folks talk about affordable housing, they immediately think of, oh, the rents are so high or the houses are so expensive to buy. And that's only half of the story. Affordability really has to consider both the expense of the dwelling and the purchasing power of the individual who's trying to buy a house or trying to rent an apartment. And Michigan's housing is actually relatively cheap compared to most states in the United States. We only rank 30th in the nation in terms of the cost of getting a decent middle-quality apartment in our metropolitan areas. What our problem in Michigan is in terms of housing affordability is not so much that the dwellings are so expensive to rent or buy, but that our population has been impoverished over a long period of time, especially in the first decade of the 21st century. Our affordability problem is quite distinct from, let's say, California's, where even people way up the income scale are having a very difficult time affording housing. Here, our problem is essentially that the mix or the match between what people can afford to spend and what the housing is costing is our problem. Let me just give you an illustration of how one can't simply look at the price of a house or the cost of an apartment and assume that there's an affordability issue.
Okay.
Let's start with Ann Arbor. Ann Arbor is one of the most expensive metro areas in Michigan in terms of the cost of housing. For example, the fair market rent, which is a HUD-defined point where a decent middle-quality apartment, two-bedroom apartment, that figure for Ann Arbor in the most recent statistics is $964 a month.
Okay.
Now, let's compare that to a much less expensive metro area in Michigan, Grand Rapids. That same apartment, a decent two-bedroom middle-quality apartment, would cost only $737. So you'd think, well, my goodness, Ann Arbor's over $200 a month more expensive for the same kind of apartment. There must be a bigger affordability crisis in Ann Arbor than in Grand Rapids. Well, not really. because we have to then compare what the basic income distribution is of the households in Ann Arbor versus Grand Rapids. And not too surprisingly, the Ann Arbor household income distribution is much, much, much higher. If you compare the amount of rent that people have to pay as a share of their income as a measure of affordability, you see that, in fact, Grand Rapids is having a bigger affordability crisis than Ann Arbor. That's Michigan's issue. It's not simply that our housing is so expensive. It's mainly because our population is just not very well off.
And more people are falling out of the middle class.
Exactly. The housing affordability problem is absolutely more severe the farther down the income distribution you go.
Who is bearing that burden of housing affordability the most in Michigan, George?
It's the lowest income renters of Michigan who are by far the most burdened by this housing unaffordability issue. And it's mainly because that their incomes have fallen so much they can't afford a decent apartment. They're forced to occupy very poor quality, sometimes overcrowded dwellings in very uninviting neighborhoods just to make it by. And even then, they are typically paying much more than 30% of their income in rent. In fact, the majority of low-income renters in Michigan are paying more than half of their income toward rent. So they're extremely stretched in terms of what fraction of their budget is left over to buy food and everything else that you have for survival.
George, we asked Michigan radio listeners on our Facebook page to describe what they see as the meaning of affordable housing in seven words or less. And some of these comments really do kind of illustrate how pressing of an issue this is in Michigan. Kate Wilnow writes, "Only housing I can afford, I inherited." Katie Snell writes, "A mythical creature, elusive as a unicorn." Stephen King says he describes affordable housing as an old wives' tale called the American Dream. How did we get here where this seems to be such, when we're calling this a mythical creature, elusive as a unicorn?
In Michigan, it's been a story that is focused really on our economy much more than our housing markets for decades. The prosperity that was founded on the Michigan industrial base with a strong union movement has been consistently eroded. And with that hollowing out of the income distribution and the sliding of many people out of the middle class into lower economic groups, we have found that the ability to buy all sorts of things, including housing, has been eroded. We've, as a state, slipped into this housing affordability problem as part of our general impoverishment. We as a state have fallen down the league tables of economic prosperity in virtually every category, and we frankly sit very near the bottom of the United States in terms of a variety of economic indicators. And that, I think, is the ultimate story behind our affordability. It's not because it costs so much to build or maintain housing in the state. In fact, it's not at all. That is the source of the problem. It's really a problem of impoverishment.
I'm speaking with Wayne State University Professor of Urban Affairs, George Galster. George, you pointed out that bearing the burden the most are the lowest income folks, but we're also seeing that lost middle, housing challenges affecting that lost middle. Just who are they and why has this become such a problem for them?
By and large, the folks who are clinging to middle class status with less earnings coming from the labor market have been vulnerable to essentially come-ons by the mortgage industry, which have tried to induce them to hold on to that central icon of middle-class status, which is owning your own home. So I think that the overall economic impoverishment of the middle class as they've fallen out of the opportunity to get what used to be good-paying manufacturing jobs and now have to settle for much lower-paying jobs, coupled with past exploitative practices by the mortgage lending industry, have left the remnants of Michigan's middle class pretty well closed out of what traditionally has been the middle class housing home ownership market.
You paint a very chilling picture, and it's certainly one that resonates in every corner of Michigan. George, what do you think are some policies and practices to help out with this that we've tried or are in place now to address this issue?
Well, we've actually, as a state, experimented with a variety of programs that I think, in principle, held a lot of promise. The Michigan State Housing Development Authority, MSHDA as it's called, has had a variety of programs over the years to help subsidize the production of multifamily housing that would provide mixed-income living environments in a decent quality environment. those kinds of developments have often been important in stabilizing urban neighborhoods that otherwise were going to decline and creating very attractive urban environments. Michigan also has recently announced that we would have low-income mortgage incentives for first-time homebuyers, again, to try to help those that are on the verge of becoming homebuyers. And that kind of program of a mortgage interest subsidy holds some promise as well to help those who are financially capable of not only attaining but sustaining home ownership. The problem in Michigan is fundamentally that we've been unwilling to put our money where our mouth is. We have these prototype programs that are doing okay, but they're just so minimal compared to the scale of the problem. I think that if Michigan is serious about its affordable housing issues, it has to figure out a new way to fund them. And I know in this state to talk about revenue enhancements, i.e. higher taxes, is almost to be using swear words. Mm. I nevertheless believe that it's absolutely necessary and that we cannot fall prey to those who say no new taxes under any circumstances. That is just inappropriate.
Our mission is to improve the economic and social health through housing and community development activities.
We turn now to Michelle Wildman, Chief Housing Investment Officer with MISHDA, the Michigan State Housing Development Authority.
We administer vouchers that subsidizes rents in a more scattered site approach. We also offer single-family loan products for low- and moderate-income families who are really looking to become homeowners, and through that same token offer down payment assistance. We finance the creation of affordable housing in multifamily developments throughout the state. That's sort of what MISHDA does in a nutshell. It's really looking to provide affordable housing to sort of meet people where they are through a variety of different vehicles.
In the terms of that old saying, all roads lead to Rome, in a sense it sounds like all roads to affordable housing lead to MISHDA.
We certainly have, I would say, the broadest scope of tools that we work with, and working closely with our local community partners who play a really critical role in carrying out the work that we do.
How much support, though, we have to ask, are you getting from state government in a sense of, we look at MISHDA funding over the last 20 years, it's gone down even as the affordable housing crisis has gotten worse.
MISHDA is fortunate in that we created a model where we don't rely on state general funds. We do sell bonds and have mortgage products that allows us to finance, and the revenues off that then sustains the staffing and programming that allows us to administer tools throughout Michigan.
We saw a recent report that MISHDA is awarding some $12 million to various affordable housing projects around the state. Can you give us some details on this?
Sure. I think that you're referring to our 9% low-income housing tax credit program. That's the announcement we recently made. 9% LIHTC program is a competitive funding round where developers submit proposals for affordable housing. Those projects seek awards of federal tax credits, and those credits are in turn sold to investors to offset their tax liability. Those revenues then from those sales go into financing the creation or preservation of housing that's affordable for Michigan families.
How much money comes from the federal government, Michelle, and how much are we putting in terms of state dollars?
That's a tough question to answer, I guess, in its entirety, and I'll explain why. I just talked about one program, but we see financing through a number of revenues, both through the Federal Home Program, which Michigan receives an award. There's also allocations that go directly to local units of government that also finances the creation of affordable housing. We sell tax-exempt bonds that finances single-family loan products or multifamily loan products. In terms of state dollars, we do have some MISHDA grant funds that we put into projects through our what we call a housing development fund. So I guess that kind of speaks to what we offer broadly across the board.
In terms of a percentage breakdown, can you give us a sense how much comes from the state and how much comes from the feds?
MISHDA doesn't receive any state general funds at all. So if you're speaking specifically to our agency, it would be zero. We do finance some, and the revenues off of the bonds that we sell and the loans that we offer finance some funds, but we don't receive any state general funds at all.
As we just heard, the bulk of financial support for affordable housing basically comes from the federal government. George Galster believes that we, as citizens of Michigan, need to do a better job of, if you will, putting our money where our mouth is, of breaking the status quo. And that's the very question we tackle on The Next Idea. So we asked George Galster, what's your next idea?
I, for one, think that the best thing that we should do in Michigan is to establish a housing trust fund that is funded seriously with a progressive tax system. In particular, a housing trust fund that is funded through a surcharge that comes through the Michigan state income tax of a 1 percentage point surcharge for those households earning more than $100,000 a year. Frankly, I think that Michiganians who are so fortunate as to be in that elite economic position should and would be willing to pay that extra 1% into a trust fund which they knew would be dedicated to providing more affordable housing opportunities for struggling citizens of their state. If we were to do this, we could raise hundreds of millions of dollars a year, which would go a long way towards solving Michigan's affordable housing crisis. If, for example, we turned around and used that trust fund money to fund vouchers that MISHTA could use to help subsidize the purchasing power of modest income renters and reduce their rent burdens, we could help tens of thousands of low-income renters across the state of Michigan get out of these housing affordability problems. It's not rocket science. We know that the Department of Housing and Urban Development funds vouchers. Michigan could do the same kind of parallel program because we know that only about a quarter of the people who qualify for vouchers in Michigan actually get them. And that's because Washington has chose to underfund it. Michigan has chose to underfund it. It's inexcusable given the situation we're in today. And Cindy, this is more than simply an issue of fairness. Of course, it's about fairness. I believe that the privileged people in Michigan, and I'm one of them, should be willing and able to contribute to the greater well-being for those Michiganians who are less well off. But it's also enlightened self-interest for the state of Michigan to fund affordable housing. It's enlightened self-interest because affordable housing is one of the basic mechanisms for growing a better, stronger, more productive Michigan into the future. If a family today has to pay more than 50% of their income just to rent a crummy apartment, imagine what's left over for enrichment activities for the children in the home, decent food, decent recreational opportunities. The answer is not much. And so affordable housing is right now having an impact on the quality of the development of Michigan's children. Most of Michigan's children, unfortunately, are growing up in low-income households who are facing these huge housing affordability problems, and their parents are being forced to skimp on all of the things that are most important for the development of these kids. We are paying a huge price in Michigan for this underdevelopment of our children. And so if we think about affordable housing as investing in our state's children, not just as a form of welfare, a form of handout, but no, a smart investment in the state's children, then I think we could mount a political campaign that would convince Michiganians that it's not only the right thing to do, but it's the smart thing to do.
We just heard one idea on how to address affordable housing from urban planner George Galster. Coming up after the break, we'll explore a tool which has been used in other parts of the country, but which has been outlawed in Michigan.
The best fix would be to allow each community to say, we've done this analysis, we've identified these priority goals, and this is how particularly we would like it to apply to our real estate market.
You've been listening to a State of Opportunity special here on Michigan Radio. We welcome your thoughts and ideas. Search for State of Opportunity on Facebook, tweet us at State of Op with two P's, or as always, at the State of Opportunity link at MichiganRadio.org.
Support for The Next Idea on Stateside comes from Michigan Economic Development Corporation, committed to marketing Michigan to drive job growth and investment in our communities. MichiganBusiness.org.
My actual day-to-day experience was a lot of frustration and disappointment when I would go to different apartment complexes or different potential housing opportunities, and then they would tell me that cost. And it was like a sinking feeling, right? You know, just a feeling of hopelessness, to be honest with you, and a lot of despair.
The steps out of the despair that Melvin Parson describes could include something called inclusionary zoning, or IZ. IZ links the building of affordable housing with market rate housing. It's been tried in some parts of the country, but here in Michigan, IZ has been outlawed. Let's learn more about inclusionary zoning as we welcome Brett Lennart. He's interim director of the Department of Community and Economic Development for Washtenaw County. And Dennis Sturdivant is with us from Grand Rapids, where he's the longtime executive director of Dwelling Place, which is a housing nonprofit. Well, Dennis, inclusionary zoning, we want to get into that now. It's certainly growing in popularity around the country. Can you give us an example of how it works?
It's essentially a tool to, in some cases it's voluntary, in other cases it's mandatory in some places, to provide a developer with an incentive to create within a project, a development that they might be considering, opportunities for building some affordable housing units within that development. Now, again, it could be home ownership units they're building, it could be rental units they're doing. Some communities, instead of requiring that these units actually be in the building or the development where the market rate stuff is, are actually allowing for fees to be paid. Those fees might help to support this housing trust or something like that to create affordable housing units in other locations. Or the developer may be actually involved in an affordable housing development project nearby or something like this. But density bonuses, you can go a few floors higher if you agree to ensure that there's some affordable housing units available. They often also come with affordability restrictions, that is, time limits that these units, these affordable units, have to remain affordable too. I know that there's, from what I've seen, there are some communities where that is not a requirement, and you know, it's only the first family in that needs to be an affordable household, but those are more typical, I think, with homeownership type units. With rental units, the affordability restrictions tend to stay on longer. One of the big challenges we have here, of course, is that in these states where this is going on, there's enabling legislation that allows for it. Michigan has not really been open to that. I don't remember the last time there was legislation introduced. I know there's some current conversation going on, but that's one of the problems, is we need to, just like downtown development authorities and all these other programs that we have, there's state-enabling legislation that allows them to take place.
So there's conversations that you're aware of, but I don't get a sense that there are any solid efforts underway for a legislative fix in terms of the fact that, as you say, mandatory IZ is outlawed in Michigan. Would that be a big start in your mind, Brett, to help things along?
Yeah, absolutely. Having this as a tool gives the community the opportunity to have that conversation to say, okay, how do we want to apply it? In what circumstances? To what extent? Having the flexibility to flesh out some of those details about, is it a first family in? Is it over a period of time? In markets such as Ann Arbor, the amenities and the quality of life, the access to parks, the great services, the access to economic opportunity, the great transit, the same things that drive up real estate value are really critical to sustainable households at low income levels. And that is the challenge, right? So how do we leverage that market investment in such a way that we are either adding some portion of those units that are affordable to a broader income spectrum, or at a minimum, finding some ways to leverage some of that development to meet that outcome in other sites or other locations throughout the city. You're also seeing this play out in other communities across the state. A lot of conversation happening in the Grand Traverse area. Their bread and butter is obviously recreation and tourism. And to the extent that those businesses, which are starting to face real challenges in finding employees who are able to live in close proximity to get to work, that's a big concern for the viability of that area and making sure that that tourism industry continues to thrive and continues to be a growth center. Similarly, as you're looking at communities like the city of Detroit with new investment around stadiums and other positive job growth, how do you make sure you're not displacing individuals? So the opportunity to open up inclusionary zoning for a wide variety of communities, and they might apply it in slightly different ways and to different benefits.
But that's really the beauty of inclusionary zoning, right? It lets communities get creative, quite a versatile tool. Is a conversation about opening that up in Ann Arbor, would that be welcomed?
I think so. It was identified in the housing affordability report that the city identified.
What about amongst the community?
That bears to be seen. I mean, I think part of the success is how it manifests in those communities, what kind of goals and parameters. To be clear, you know, if you are developing a project and you are unfettered as to how much rent you can charge and what the value of those units are compared to having to fit that into the context of a community plan or a some long-term aspirational goals, that's certainly a balance that's going to come into play. But at the same token, that's what's happening now, right? When you have high-value markets, typically the market's going to move towards maximizing the opportunity and, in fact, the profit in those units, which starts creating this dichotomy and starts creating these separations of economic strata within our community.
Dennis Sturdivant, what about in Grand Rapids? Would residents welcome this conversation and welcome inclusionary zoning?
Well, like almost every issue, I think you would find a large number of residents who would welcome this conversation and issue and some who wouldn't. You know, the arguments that are used against inclusionary zoning usually run along two main themes. One is by making requirements for developers to include affordable housing units in their development, they're reducing profits for those developers, and they're likely then to look elsewhere to do development in communities that don't have these kinds of requirements, thereby creating an upward pressure on the market because of the lack of available units because developers aren't willing to work in those communities. How true that is across the United States, I'm not sure. I don't think there's been a lot of great research about that. The second issue that people have raised is that it's unfair to place the entire burden of providing affordable housing unit on the developer, and that should be shared across the community. Why don't we take care of it with our taxes that we pay and have it, you know, funneled through the State Housing Authority or local trust funds or whatever to get this work done instead of burdening the developer with that? So there's some pretty strong opposition from some parts of the community. I've not actually had too many conversations with developers who have that perspective, but I know that nationally that's been kind of the two big arguments against it. The city commission here has been very, very supportive of this, and we see it in most of the actions that they're taking and in this report that they just issued, policy statement they issued at the end of the year. I think they would be very supportive of it, and any legislation that might be introduced to try to include inclusionary zoning in state law. But again, I'm suspecting there would be, like everything, some opposition coming, and then we would better understand what the nature of that opposition is in Michigan. But I'm thinking it would probably go along the lines that I mentioned earlier if there was.
And I would just jump onto that a bit. I mean, I think one of the challenges of having this conversation widely is that as housing becomes more segregated by income, this has a cost to our overall economic growth potential. For example, as part of our study, we highlight some analysis done by PolicyLink, something called the National Equity Atlas, which race and poverty are very close proxies to each other demographically within most communities across the country, including, in our case, Washtenaw County. And what the Equity Atlas does is it analyzes that racially inclusive communities tend to perform better, they tend to have better economic growth potential, and they tend to sustain challenges to their economy and sustainability on a more on a stronger basis. And so when you're talking about that balance of private and public sector support for how we're achieving these goals, absolutely critical conversations. And I think in at least our two communities, you'll find that there's support on both of those fronts. But to the end that we're successful in integrating our housing, in the case of that analysis that PolicyLink did for our county, it would have had about a $1.4 billion positive impact to our GDP in 2012. There are obviously some narrow applications of how that would work on a project-by-project basis, but it also has some implications for our overall growth potential going forward.
As you look across the landscape of the country, really, how much evidence have you seen that IZ is working in other communities? And by that, I mean that it's both increasing the number of affordable housing units and at the same time, it's not slowing the growth of market rate housing. What do you see, Brett?
Well, I think that's the balance in the application of it. From my lens, the first step is to start some of that research now and to try to answer that question. Right now, it's not really a viable tool. I think that is the balance. When you're looking at a market, and Ann Arbor is going to be very different than Ypsilanti or Washtenaw County different than the Grand Rapids, but opening up that tool so that we can have those conversations, and I think there is going to be a bit of a balance there to figure out to what extent are you able to leverage that investment to achieve some affordable units, or as Dennis said, is it a fee in lieu or some other opportunity to invest alternatively into affordable housing? I really do think that's going to manifest in different geographies, different housing targets, maybe even different income targets. So I think the best fix would be to allow each community to say, we've done this analysis, we've identified these priority goals, and this is how particularly we would like it to apply it to our real estate market to see how that balance works.
Brett Lennart is Interim Director of the Department of Community and Economic Development for Washtenaw County. And Dennis Sturtevant was with us from Grand Rapids, where he's Executive Director of the housing nonprofit Dwelling Place. Gentlemen, thanks so much to both of you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
From a developer's point of view, inclusionary zoning is deceptively simple on paper. In practice, IZ is tough to get right.
It sounds really easy to do, and that would solve all the problems, but there's a lot of unintended consequences.
Mark McDaniel is the president of the Michigan Housing Council and CEO of Synair, a nonprofit housing corporation. He points to what happened in Maryland.
They were kind of the first ones, due to some Supreme Court cases, that, you know, got into using zoning or just ordinances that required, if you're going to do market rate development, you had to do at least 20% of the units as affordable. Just blanket across everything. And in some cases that works, and in some cases that's not a good mix of housing. And also just in, you know, what you're trying to accomplish in a particular development district. When you have people that really know how to administer it and how to use it, it can be effective, but it's something you got to be really careful about doing.
As to why more developers don't build multifamily affordable housing?
It's a type of a business model that not everybody can do because it's very complex. It's very complex financing. It's more than just going to a bank and getting a mortgage and putting some of your own money into the deal and going out and building, developing, owning something. To have this type of housing be affordable, you're looking at layers of financing. I've been involved in deals that have 13 different sources of financing involved in it to keep it affordable. Those 13 sources all coming from different agencies, banks, intermediaries. They all have their own rules, their own partnership agreements. And to try to manage that and have it all like work at the end to start construction, it's an expertise and skill that is very specialized.
But despite all that, McDaniel believes we need affordable housing.
People have a misconception about what affordable housing is. As all the years I've been in it, and when you go to do public hearings to try to get a development approved, those public hearings are always filled with a lot of people who have prejudice and just basically misunderstanding of what affordable housing is and who the people are that live in it. Just look at ourselves and our history, our personal histories. When we got out of school, if it was just out of high school and we went to get a job or we got out of college, almost all of us at one time or another qualified for affordable housing and needed it. These are, you know, bank tellers, policemen, nurses, nurse assistants, you know, all the service workers that are out there, you know, serving, even some the people that we hire as right out of college as assistant financial analysts would qualify. It is an important component to any economic toolbox in any community that you pay attention and you make affordable housing part of your economic strategy. But unfortunately, the perception of it is something that everybody looks at Cabrini Greens of Chicago as their definition of what affordable housing is, and that's really a mistaken viewpoint.
Which brings us to the central question of this State of Opportunity special. What's at stake for Michigan, for our communities, if we don't figure out a way to make more housing more affordable for more people?
I think we'll become more economically segregated. I think we'll become more racially segregated. I think that'll start compromising our ability to be great places. And then very practically, it'll become very challenging for people who grow up in these high-value communities to have their children be able to come home and start professions or to even age in place.
There are so many young people who are graduating with a huge debt burden, and they will choose, I think, for example, and in fact I've heard this, why come to Michigan if I have to pay that amount of rent? I might as well go to Chicago where there are even more big city amenities.
Erosion of the middle class across the state is a likely outcome of some of this if we aren't finding ways to address the issue. You know, what's the economic impact on families? if you know, people working in service industries and lower paying jobs and stuff are actually having essentially a surcharge on their income because they can't afford to live near where they work. So there's just all kinds of issues that surface if we don't try to address the issue of affordable housing in every community in the state.
And there's more. All hour, we've heard Gwyneth Hayes and Melvin Parson tell us their stories. What they've been able to do since finding stable housing should leave us all wondering how many thousands more people are out there in Michigan just like them. And how much have all of our communities missed out on because we haven't been able to address our lack of affordable housing in Michigan?
Well, now I have my master's in social work, and I just recently got a job as a housing specialist where I drive around in the city of Detroit and help individuals with disabilities who are experiencing housing crisis find homes. And I make just enough money now that I no longer qualify to be in the program. I'm just over the threshold. So I have to move out by May 1st. So we'll see how this goes. I'm going out into the real world and having to pay real rent.
Some of the things that have been accomplished as a result of affordable housing in my life is the ability to go back to school and to be able to have the focus to study, right? You know, because I don't have to concern myself with housing. I've become somehow or another, I've become a stakeholder in my community as a result of affordable housing. I am also a person in recovery, and affordable housing has been a great stress reliever in relation to that aspect of my life. I started a farming initiative as a result of affordable housing. So much of who I am today and the opportunities that I have and the things that I'm able to do greatly, deeply connected to affordable housing.
You've been listening to a State of Opportunity special here on Michigan Radio. We welcome your thoughts and your ideas. Search for State of Opportunity on Facebook. Tweet us at State of Op with two P's. Or as always, at the State of Opportunity link at MichiganRadio.org. Our executive producer is Joe Lindstroth. The special was directed by Mercedes Mejia. Contributors are Mike Blank, Ellie Billings, Sean McHenry, Cass Adair, Ryan Grimes, and Amelia Zack. This State of Opportunity special is a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcasting service of the University of Michigan. I'm Cynthia Canty. Thank you for listening.
Support for State of Opportunity comes from W.K. Kellogg Foundation, a partner with communities where children come first.